Welcome to another exciting episode of Breaking the Banksters, normally with Ben Cochran, but Suzanne, myself, I'm sitting in again. Ben is off on business, and I find myself traveling this time, so I'm actually pre-recording the show, and I apologize for that. I won't be able to take call-ins, but it's an exciting weekend, and I'm, unrelated to anything going on in Vegas. It doesn't seem to be affecting the markets as far as I can tell. And it's a terrible thing, and we'll see how it plays out. But anyway, the exciting thing that I saw this week is that Trump is calling to end Puerto Rico's debt in order to help it bail out of this horrible hurricane damage that they have sustained. And it just shocked me when I saw this because, I've been hearing rumors, making the people that he's evacuating sign papers that they promised to pay back the flights that got him out and all this stuff and petty little stuff and I hear this from people that ordinarily I would respect, but they just look behind the scenes of all the news stories out there, but then they just have to dump on Trump, and I'm so sick of that. Anyway, this thing with Puerto Rico is just amazing, and I found it on InfoWars, and they got it from RT. And RT, let me read it to you. It says, Trump says Puerto Rico's debt needs to be wiped out, and this was published on October 4th. Looks like early in the morning. Anyway, they have a picture of Trump sitting at the table with Melania to his side, and you know how he does these press conferences when he does these hurricane visits. And it's a sad thing. People's homes and lives have been wiped out, but he's there for moral support and to oversee the delivery of the provisions. And I'm kind of giggling a little bit because I think I talked about it last time. I'm not sure. But, they tried to lay on Trump. The provisions that they're shipping in from the states to Puerto Rico, they're not delivering them, and what a terrible thing. Well, it turns out they're all there sitting on the docks, and it's the Puerto Rican Teamsters Union that has called a strike, and I don't know if they've cleaned it up yet. But, they called a strike and refused to deliver the food, medicine, and water and, just nonsense stuff. Any chance that they get to try to set up Trump to look dumb. Anyway, he's sitting under the, it says Puerto Rico Air Guard. That's where his table is set up. Anyway, the article says U.S. President Donald Trump said that Puerto Rico's $74 billion debt would have to be wiped out to help the island recover from the catastrophic damage caused by Hurricane Maria that he witnessed during his visit. This is a quote from him. We're going to work something out. We have to look at their whole debt structure. They owe a lot of money to your friends on Wall Street, and we're going to have to wipe that out. You're going to say goodbye to that. I don't know if it's Goldman Sachs, but whoever it is, you can wave goodbye to that, Trump told Fox News, according to Reuters. Now, I think there's more behind the statement that they're not telling us. Anyway, Trump visited Puerto Rico on Tuesday, nearly 2 weeks after Hurricane Maria destroyed the island's infrastructure, leaving the majority of the 3.5 million residents without access to power. During his visit, Trump said that the reconstruction costs have thrown the federal budget out of whack, quote unquote. down home talk. Anyway, quote, I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you've thrown our budget out of whack because we have spent a lot of money on Puerto Rico, and that's fine. We've saved a lot of lives, Trump said. Anyway, there's a picture here of, I guess it's RT's tweet. You can be very proud, they're quoting Trump, praises hurricane relief in Puerto Rico on rt.com/8OXV. Well, whatever. Moody's estimated that the recovery could cost as much as $95 billion, according to Reuters. This is on top of the $64 billion debt they already have. I mean, they're already practically in bankruptcy before this ever hit. Anyway, they got part of Hurricane Irma, too, if I recall. But this Hurricane Maria, I just don't know that any lives were lost. I sure hope not. In May, Puerto Rico filed for the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. municipal history, so I guess they were bankrupt. Approximately $74 billion of bond debt and $48 billion of unfunded pension liabilities. Wow. The bankruptcy would break the record in the U.S., which was previously set by the $18 billion Chapter 9 claim by Detroit, Michigan in 2013. The island's economy has been in recession for nearly 10 years, with an unemployment in, you know what causes recession, right? Not bad. With an unemployment rate of about 11%, and you know that's kind of simplifying it. Unemployment rate of about 11%. At the same time, the population has fallen by about 10% in the past decade. Yeah, they're all getting out. According to the census data taken before the storm hit Puerto Rico, unemployment on the island was about 11%, while the poverty rate stood at 45%. The average income was $19,350, compared to the average income of the entire U.S., which stands at $56,516. The White House is also reportedly preparing a $29 billion disaster aid request to support recovery efforts in Puerto Rico, Texas, and Florida, according to Reuters. The White House will ask Congress to fund $13 billion in new relief for hurricane victims and to forgive $16 billion in debt that has accumulated in the National Flood Insurance Program. The request is expected to be sent to lawmakers in Congress by Wednesday, and that was, I guess, yesterday now. After Trump left the island, Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rossello updated the official death toll from 16 to 34. Oh, some people have succumbed. Rossello said that the main causes of death were flooding, flying debris, and mudslides. The death toll is expected to increase further in the coming weeks, I guess, as they find bodies. Anyway, so that's RT's take on it, and InfoWars picked up on it, and let me see if it's the identical article or if they changed it a little bit. I think it's the same article. Yeah, it's the same article on InfoWars, and they tipped me off, and RT carried it, and that would be nice. And I have a little bit of a different take on it because of these other articles that I have coming up. And so I'll come back to this Puerto Rico thing. But these other articles, well, the reason that he can so easily say, let's forgive the Puerto Rican debt, is because really in the next few years, even the bankers aren't going to want the U.S. dollars back because of what's happening with the cryptocurrencies. So this I also picked up on InfoWars, and I traced it back to, they got it from Zero Hedge, and that's really reputable too. And the Zero Hedge got it from the IMF itself. I don't know if they sent somebody into the meeting or if they just picked up the paper, but at IMF.org, it says IMF head, the headline on Zero Hedge is IMF head foresees the end of banking as Bitcoin surges above 4,400. Well, it's not at 4,400 right now. It kind of fluctuates, but it is over 4,000 right now. And, you know, it's kind of taking a breather. The old J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon had knocked it down, jumped on the Chinese banning it, and jumped on the dip to try to make it deeper, and he bought Bitcoin himself. And that, you know, I talked about that last week. But Bitcoin is up above 4,100 now after having taken a brief dip down to 3,000. And so the article is, IMF head foresees the end of banking as Bitcoin surges above 4,400. And this is what I've been saying, because when you see Bitcoin surging, what you're really seeing is a run on other currencies, whether it's the U.S. dollar or the euro. There are exchanges all over the world, and you know the ones that most Americans use is Coinbase, and they will accept dollars and euros, I think. And you upload those from your bank accounts, and then you can start buying Bitcoin, Ethereum, or Litecoin. Those are the only three cryptocurrencies that Coinbase handles. But you know, for Americans, that's where we get our start. So yeah, I have a little bit in there. Anyway, the subtitle is Central Banks Losing Monopoly on Currency. This is Zero Hedge, October 2nd. So in a remarkably frank talk at the Bank of England conference, the managing director of the International Monetary Fund has speculated that Bitcoin and cryptocurrency have as much of a future as the internet itself. It could displace central banks, conventional banking, and challenge the monopoly of national monies. Yep, because when you centralize anything, somebody at the top there, at the top of the pyramid, there's always somebody that gets their fingers in the pie, and if it's not incompetence, it's outright corruption. And, you know, this Bitcoin was invented right after the big scandal of 2008 that cascaded drastic economic consequences all over the world because people at the top were bundling bad loan assets with good assets and then selling them as if they were all good assets. And, of course, there were people defaulting, and they were not good assets. And that was drastic. The bankers all got their bailouts and left the taxpayers holding the bag. And somebody got a bee in his bonnet. The theoretical name of the guy was Satoshi Nakamoto, and he invented Bitcoin, and then he disappeared off the scene because, he was there for the first couple of years. But when the CIA started sniffing around, he disappeared. That's it. Nobody knows if he was a real person or a group of people. Nobody knows. But that's the story. It was designed as a kill shot to excise the bankers from the economy all over the world, the central bankers, manipulating their good economies and bad economies by just growing and shrinking the currencies. And people had enough. Satoshi Nakamoto had enough, and he invented the Bitcoin. And that has generated a whole lot of other coins that are competing with it. They all have technical differences. They do slightly different technical things. So this could go on for centuries with different currencies, but that's all right because there's the way that they're set up, except for a few. There are a few actually designed by bankers to be centralized, and you got to sniff them out and stay away from them. At least I would. Anyway, the subtitle, it could display central banks, conventional banking, and challenge the monopoly of national monies. Christine Lagarde, a Paris native who has held her position at the IMF since 2011, says the only substantial problems with existing cryptocurrency are fixable over time. Yeah. In the long run, the technology itself can replace national monies, conventional financial intermediation, and even put a question mark on the fractional banking model we know today. You're darn right. That's its goal. In a lecture that chastised her colleagues for failing to embrace the future, she warned, not so long ago, some experts argued that personal computers would never be adopted and that tablets would only be used as expensive coffee trays. So I think it may not be wise to dismiss virtual currencies. And, some of these banks just really think that they're good people. I had this discussion with my son today. They think they're doing the right thing when they shake down people and foreclose their homes just by tightening and loosening the money supply. And I had to differ with them. And that's willful self-delusion. Anyway, it says, here are the relevant parts of her paper. And it's a quote. Let us start with virtual currencies. To be clear, this is not about digital payments in existing currencies through PayPal and other quote-unquote e-money providers such as Alipay in China or M-Pesa in Kenya. Virtual currencies are, whoa. I'm not sure what happened. My screen jumped. Let me get back to the screen I was on. Because it's a nice, more 6 feet. I lost it. Oh, there it is. Okay, sorry. Let us start with virtual currencies. To be clear, this is not about payments in existing currencies and other quote-unquote e-money providers such as Alipay in China or M-Pesa in Kenya. Virtual currencies, and this is quoting Christine Lagarde, virtual currencies are in a different category because they provide their own unit of account and payment systems. These systems allow for peer-to-peer transactions without central clearinghouses, without central banks, and without any corporation at the top of them. For now, virtual currencies such as Bitcoin pose little or no challenge to the existing order of fiat currencies and central banks. Why? Because they're too volatile, too risky, too energy intensive, and because the underlying technologies are not yet scalable. I don't see a problem with people buying into Bitcoin. And sure, because until it reaches a critical mass of people owning Bitcoin, yeah, it's when you don't have enough volume, things are going to be volatile. And you'll see that with young stocks and things too. But this is not a stock. And in the long term, it won't act like a stock. Anyway, because you're too volatile, too risky, too energy intensive, and because the underlying technology is not yet scalable. They are scalable, I'm sorry to say. Well, I'm sorry to correct her, but she's trying to bolster her people, I guess. Many are too opaque for regulators, and some have been hacked. Yeah, Ethereum was hacked. They did reverse that. And anyway, but many of these are technological challenges that could be addressed over time. Not so long ago, some experts argued that personal computers would never be adopted and that tablets would only be used as expensive coffee trays. So I think it may not be wise to dismiss virtual currencies. Better value for money? Countries with weak institutions and unstable national currencies, yeah, like Venezuela. Instead of adopting the currency of another country such as the U.S. dollar, some of these economies might see a growing use of virtual currencies. Call it dollarization 2.0. IMF experience shows that there is a tipping point beyond which coordination around a new currency is exponential. In the Seychelles, for example, dollarization jumped from 20% in 2006 to 60% in 2008. I wonder what they had before. And yet, why might citizens hold virtual currencies rather than physical dollars, euros, or sterling? Because it may one day be easier and safer than obtaining paper bills. I see what it is. I have the IMS site up itself, and it keeps flashing pop-ups and taking over all my tabs. Okay, I've closed that tab. Anyway, so why might dollars hold, citizens hold, virtual currencies rather than physical dollars, euros, or sterling, because one day it might be easier and safer than obtaining paper bills, especially in remote regions, and because virtual currencies could actually become more stable. Yeah, I think so. For instance, they could be issued one for one for dollars or a stable basket of currencies. Issuance could be fully transparent, governed by a credible, predefinite rule. She's still thinking in centralization terms. An algorithm can be monitored. Okay, yeah, that's what they are doing with Bitcoin. They do monitor it. The Bitcoin community does. Or even a smart rule that might reflect changing macroeconomic circumstances. So in many ways, virtual currencies might just give existing currencies and monetary policy a run for their money. The best response by central bankers is to continue running effective monetary policy while being open to fresh ideas and new demands as economies evolve. Yeah, their first inclination was to create a centralized electronic currency that was more efficient, like transferring money overseas. The way it stands right now, if you have somebody that you want to buy from in Africa, and you're both holding Bitcoin, they accept Bitcoin, the shop in Africa accepts Bitcoin, and you have Bitcoin to buy with, boom, you can transfer that money instantly, and that will the shop owner will be able to ship their goods depending on all these, what they call the customs regulations. But that's a totally separate issue. If it's a service, they could just game outright, you know. Anyway, whereas right now with the bankers and the fiat money, currencies, the bankers have been really slow in setting up speedy payment around the world. And they knew it was there, but you know what? They didn't have a competitor, so they didn't care. Yeah, let it take a week to pass things back and forth. As it is, if you open a Coinbase account because you want to start buying Bitcoin, Ethereum, or Litecoin, it will take you about 8 days to upload the money into the account before you can start trading. Or you can start the trade, but it will take 8 days to clear, which is effectively the same thing, but you have a little more control over the price that way, of the price of the Bitcoin. If you do it that way, you place the order, and that freezes the price, but it takes 8 days to upload the money from your bank. So anyway, that's what's going on. Anyway, and that's going on for all the businesses now. Yeah, we can, credit cards have sped things up for us, and that's all nice. But anyway, but you can't send actual money around the world. Anyway, for example, consider the growing demand for new payment services in countries where a shared decentralized service economy is taking off. This is an economy rooted in peer-to-peer transactions and frequent small-value payments, often across borders. $4 for gardening tips from a lady in New Zealand, €3 for an expert translation of a Japanese poem, and 80 pence for a virtual rendering of historic Fleet Street. These payments can be made with credit cards and other forms of e-money, but the charges are relatively high for small-value transactions, especially across borders. Yeah, those fees. Instead, citizens may one day prefer virtual currencies, since they potentially offer the same cost and convenience as cash, no settlement risks, no clearing delays, no central registration, no intermediary to check accounts and identities. Like, your identity is really their business, huh? If privately issued virtual currencies remain risky and unstable, citizens may even call on central banks to provide digital form of legal ledger. Well, a legal tender. Well, I think the next generation or two of people are going to understand the difference between a central currency and a decentral currency, and they're not going to step up to the banks and ask the same people that have been ripping off generations of Americans, particularly, and other people around the world, to solve a problem. They're just going to solve it themselves and move on and leave the banksters in the dust. And I think that's what's going on here. But she's being hopeful that they can compete. They can compete. I don't know. So when the new service economy comes knocking on the Bank of England's door, will you welcome it inside, offer it tea and financial liquidity? This is still quoting this woman, Christine Lagarde. Lagarde. Well, I'm scrolling and losing my place now. New models of financial intermediation. This brings us to the second leg of our pod journey, POD. I think it's payment on demand. New models of financial intermediation. The point is to rid of intermediation. They want to make the intermediation more efficient so they can compete. Okay, because if they don't have their hand in the middle of your transaction, they can't extract a fee, even a penny. They can't. Anyway, one possibility is the breakup or unbundling of banking services. In the future, we might keep minimal balances for payment services on electronic wallets. Yeah, they're just going to try to mimic the cryptocurrency. The remaining balances may be kept in mutual funds or invested in peer-to-peer lending platforms with an edge in big data and artificial intelligence for automatic credit scoring. This is the whole thing. They think they have a right to know everything about you and give you a grade like your first grade, you know, school child. Your credit is worth A, B, or C. You know, that's, I don't know how to describe my opinion on that. It is so degrading and dehumanizing. I really think it stinks. Anyway, of course, you know, if you're a known thief and you default on, well, actually, the way the system's set up, it's set up to label you as a bad credit risk, because every, I don't know, 7 or 8 years or so, they tighten the money supply and all money is issued as a debt. They just create the money out of thin air, and that's why they call it fiat money. They give you the loan. They just put the numbers in your account, but they didn't have it in the first place. They just wrote them into your account. But what they don't do is they don't invent the money to pay the interest back on that loan that you have. And so when they go around tightening the economy every few years, they actually are shaking out fruit at the bottom of the tree, where there will be people that are unable to make their payments because now there's not enough money in the economy to pay the loans and the insurance. And so these people end up forfeiting, getting their houses, homes, businesses, assets all foreclosed on. And this is what the banksters have been doing for centuries now. This is where the real wealth is in an economy. It's what people have and do and own, and they just suck that off them. And anyway, this is all involved in the American Civil War, but the Bank of England was at the heart of that one. Anyway, let's see. So they're thinking, the whole point of cryptocurrencies is you can have an offline wallet. You can even print out your codes on a piece of paper, and I don't recommend that. because I am not good with paper. But you know, I lose paper, whatever. But they do sell little devices that are about, I don't know, maybe the half the size of a cell phone, that are a little wireless. I don't want to ever put more than, I don't know, $100 or so in cryptocurrency in a phone app, because I don't want to be walking around with my life savings in a phone. You know, the phone could be stolen or whatever, and that just gives me the creeps. So I have mine in a hard drive that I unplug from my computer. So, you know, I'm not going to get hackers in there or anything like that. And I'll get around to getting a physical wallet sometime that's more apt for that. And actually, I have most of mine in Coinbase right now, and that's not advisable either, because that's treating it as if it's a centralized thing. And I have to grow. I mean, I own some Bitcoin, but I don't fully understand how to use it, how to download it into my own hard drive, anything like that. And that's my next step. Anyway, so I go on. This is more Christine LaMarche now. This is a world of 6-month product development cycles and constant updates, primarily of software, with a huge premium on simple user interfaces and trusted security. A world where data is king. A world of many new players without imposing branch offices. Data is king, all right, and you have a right to control your own and not have to trust it to a central authority like Equifax, who's grading you on your life and losing your data to half the American population. Anyway, some would argue this put the question mark on the fractional banking model we know today, if there are fewer bank deposits and money flows into the economy through new channels. Yeah. This is the whole point. It's excising the banksters from the economy. How would monetary policy be set in this context? Today, central banks typically affect asset prices through primary dealers or big banks, to which they provide liquidity at fixed prices, so-called open market operations. But if these banks were to become less relevant in the new financial world and demand for central bank balances were to diminish, could monetary policy transmission remain effective? So there's a nice video at the bottom of this InfoWars article. It says, "Fed up, rates rise in boiling frog takedown of the economy." Yeah, and I mentioned that this is my third show filling in for Ben. And in one of them, I mentioned, I quoted, banks are saying in 4 different places that they plan to take down the economy in 2018. And certainly, I think that has a lot to do with trying to affect the midterm elections. They're going to, the stock market's going to crash, the dollar's going to crash. You see the Rothschilds selling all their American assets, including their dollars and their stocks. And the story is they're going to gold, but I think they're going to cryptocurrencies. But what do I know? Anyway, that's that. So even the International Monetary Fund is admitting that the next step, I guess, is to get the Fed to admit it, which they'll have to. The International Monetary Fund is admitting that fiat currencies are going to go the way of the buggy whip, where nobody will even want a fiat currency, a banker type of currency, centralized. And that's why he can be so almost cavalier about saying, let's dismiss Puerto Rico's debt. It's because even the bankers won't want the money back that they loaned Puerto Rico, because everybody's going to this crypto stuff. And before Trump's first term is up, that he will reissue the sovereign U.S. dollar. Now, if you don't understand the difference between a sovereign dollar and a banking dollar, I strongly advise going to Bill Still's YouTube channel. Bill Still made the documentary, The Money Masters, and it just explains the difference between sovereign state money and Fed-style shrinking money, manipulative money, that's the fractional reserve lending money. And, one thing I know from the last election you know, from of watching Bill Still's channel, I know that Trump is a fan of Bill Still. So, you know, learn from the best. Anyway, let me take a look at the clock here and see if it's time yet, because I feel like I need to break into a commercial. And it's just one of those things. We need to pay our sponsors. So be back in a couple minutes.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to WeFunder.com/GroundswellCard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits, like eating wholesome foods. And with tower gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Imagine standing barefoot on cushy grass while you use a professional-grade knife to deftly chop fresh vegetables on your organic bamboo cutting board. The team at MyZestiness.com wants to help your family enjoy home cooking like this more often. They do this by offering fun and functional tools that make your time in the kitchen more efficient and enjoyable. MyZestiness.com offers the finest and most interesting kitchen goods and accessories, all backed by their world-class customer service team. Check out their ever-expanding inventory today. Visit MyZestiness.com. That's zesty like spicy, nest like home, MyZestiness.com.
So I'm back, and I can change gears a little bit here and check some headlines. I like to check Coindesk.com and news.bitcoin.com and see what looks interesting. Money on Mogayer. I don't think I'm pronouncing that right. Business blockchain author launches cryptocurrency fund. Okay, SEC chair optimistic as efforts to catch ICO bad guys. Yeah, I don't really understand ICOs, and I know some of them are good and some of them are frauds. I don't know. Here's another one. OneCoin promoter targeted by Finnish police in ongoing investigation. So I've never heard of OneCoin before. So Ripple price consolidates, but could it swell higher? Now, I'd like to read that one because I think it's related. I'm not sure. I think it might be related to our Groundswell advertiser. Anyway, Ripple price consolidates. I've clicked on it. The cryptocurrency that powers Ripple's XRP ledger is showing signs it may be consolidating ahead of a boost planned for this October. At press time, the XRP US dollar exchange rate seems to be building a base around 20 cent level. It was a little bit higher like a month ago. It was up around 27 cents, I think. The third largest cryptocurrency by market capitalization has gained 2.56% in the last 24 hours. And market capitalization is how much money people have invested in it. And it's number three, which it's really hard to buy Ripple. You know, my friend Ed wanted me to look into it. You can't just upload it to something like Coinbase, upload your U.S. dollars and trade them out. You have to buy Bitcoin or another cryptocurrency first and then transfer your cryptocurrency to an exchange that doesn't do dollars. It's just crypto to crypto. And, you know, it's just too kind of spooky. So it's hard enough to get into. And so why should it be number three? It's because it's not really a general public type of thing. I did some reading on it. Ripple is like bank-to-bank transactions, and this is how they can actually they're working on this to be able to make it quick to transfer money overseas between banks, which I guess in the long run, if you know, I don't think the fiat is going to go out right away to centralized currencies. This will speed up the services that they didn't bother with before because they didn't have any competition, so they didn't give a hoot that it would take 8 days to upload, you know, currency from one bank to another. Anyway, let's see. Ripple has gained 2.56% in the last 24 hours. Elsewhere, Ripple news was quiet, and no major news was observable on its major channels and company forums. Yeah, it's a quiet time before they make a big announcement. I mean, they did announce that they were going to make an announcement, and we'll see what that is. But while week-on-week XRP is trading dead flat, you're darn right, because there's no people trading it. This is bank-to-bank stuff. It's possible traders see opportunity in an upcoming event sponsored by Ripple. Notably, this month, Ripple is to host Swell, an event aimed at bringing the world's financial leaders together to network and discuss trends and strategies. They wanna manage the world for ya. Swell will go head to head with Cibos, Cibos, Swiss annual banking and financial conference scheduled for October 16th through 19th in Toronto, Canada, and bring in speakers including World Wide Web creator Tim Berners-Lee. Now, the World Wide Web started out as like just a fancy footnote capability for scientists to share papers, and rather than scroll down to the bottom of the paper to read the related citation, you just click on it and you get the citation right there for you. And that's Tim Berners-Lee. And that's very straightforward. I don't know that he knows anything about money at all. I had no idea if he's ever seen Bill Still's Money Masters. As search volumes have shown to be heavily correlated with cryptocurrency price activity, this could foreshadow brighter days ahead for the XRP USD exchange rate. Well, I wouldn't really consider XRP a cryptocurrency because it's centralized. It's not a blockchain kind of thing. Still, it's possible that Ripple is, that's funny. That sentence has Ripple not capitalized, but it is capitalized in other sentences. Oh, well, typo. Still, it's possible that Ripple is simply trading sideways alongside the general market. Yeah, well, I would say that Litecoin is trading sideways, but I wouldn't say that Bitcoin is. I don't know. Of the falling channel on September 25th, they have a chart above this. Was followed by higher highs, higher lows, rising channel pattern. A bullish crossover between the 50-day moving average and the 100-day moving average was confirmed on October 2nd. This is for chart readers. My eyes are a little bit glazing over. View. XRP looks set to revisit 23 to 24 cent levels in the short term. So that's like 20%. Pretty close. You know, four cents out of 20 is 20% on the dollar. That's a quick return on money if you can get to the XRP Ripple. A short break below 0.19, a short break below 19 cents, confluence of 100-day moving average and rising channel support would abort the short-term bullish view. A bullish to bearish trend change would confirm if XRP drops below 18 cents, September 29th low. Disclosure, CoinDesk is a subsidiary of Digital Currency Group, which has an ownership stake in Ripple. So they managed to buy some. Now, I thought they were going to talk about the Swell stuff, and they didn't do it. Well, other than, I guess they did. Well, let's see. Yeah. An event aimed to bring the world's financial leaders, to decide. Because that's, it's very nice that their Groundswell is sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. And, rather than have all your bank fees go to the bank when you use the debit card they supply you, you can name a 501c3 nonprofit for a charitable, they don't use the word charity, but for a nonprofit organization and you can choose that. So let's see. So I clicked on Bernanke Berners-Lee to headline Ripple's Sybos Killer Conference. Sybos Killer, huh? Distributed ledger startup Ripple is stepping up its attempt to disrupt Swift, the infrastructure provider that today connects over 11,000 banks around the world. On the same day, in the same city as Swift's flagship event, Sybos, Ripple has announced it will host Swell, an event also aimed at, that's good, the bankers are going to fight among themselves, isn't it? They won't prey on you as easy. Anyway, I think they're trying to draw an audience. They're competing for audience here, and they can run back and forth and sell their DVDs to each other. Ripple has announced it will host Swell, an event also aimed at bringing the world's financial leaders together to network and discuss trends and strategies, world trends, like shootouts by people on drugs, pharmaceutical drugs. Anyway, but while similar attempts might fall short for some startups, what could set Ripple's event apart is its stakeholder buy-in, keynoting the three-day conference in October is none other than the former chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve System, Ben Bernanke, and the inventor of the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee. Taken together, the competing events represent an opportunity of sorts for attendees, many of whom could do business with Ripple and Swift, to cast a vote about their interests. Ripple Vice President of Marketing Monica Long said Ripple still intends to be a sponsor of Sybos and will continue to host a vendor booth there, but that startups' aspirations were bigger than the vendor platform. This is kind of like WordPress versus Joomla, I guess, for you code geeks out there. Anyway, our vision, this is Monica Long, she says, our vision for what we could do as an exhibitor exceeded what we could do on the floor of Sybos. The idea that we had in mind around programming, you can't accomplish that in a show floor in a booth. So I guess I don't really totally understand why she's saying that. Prior to speaking at Swell, Bernanke was among the blockchain's early supporters, writing in 2013 that the technology behind cryptocurrencies might hold long-term promise. Here it is, 2017. Likewise, Berners-Lee has long been rumored to be exploring the technology. He invented HTML code, and now he's going to learn blockchain programming. For programmers out there, there's another channel that I like that I want to get my son to watch. It's called Ivan. What is it? Techie by Ivan or something like that. I'll find it. I'll put a link to it. It's because he's got a little quick course on programming blockchain. This other guy, Jimmy Song, he's a big expert. He's a core Bitcoin programmer, and he's running seminars on programming blockchain. He says universities and colleges are not teaching it yet, and it's a hot, hot subject that they need programmers for. Absolutely, to grow it around the world, they need the infrastructure to support it. Anyway, so Ivan on Tech, I think that's it, Ivan on Tech, and he's a young guy, he's no older than my sons, And so, anyway, other swell speakers listed as confirmed include the CEO of Ripple, Brad Garlinghouse, the managing director of GE Capital's Treasury Operations, Kristen Michaud, and the head of innovation at Banco Santander, Ed Mitzker. To be held in Toronto, Canada, Swell will take place from October 16th to October 18th. While this year's Swell won't provide vendor booth opportunities similar to Cybos, Long said that could change. She concluded, "I don't know what the future will hold for this." Well, they can duke it out as long as they want. Just let the banksters duke it. They think they're good people, and maybe a lot of them are. Anyway, that's kind of interesting, and I think that's actually because if you're paying fees to use a card to a bank, and the bank is being generous enough to share it with your choice of nonprofit, that means that bank is the intermediary in your transaction. It's not like handing a greenback dollar to somebody for a candy bar, you know, exchange greenback to a candy bar. There's no intermediary in that. The dollar goes full. The whole dollar goes to the person selling the candy bar, unless the government wants to step in and tax it. But this is essentially like a banker tax. You know, when you have transaction fees, it's literally a tax to the bankers for using the card. And that's going to be long-term. That's going to hurt Ripple in regards to its competitor, Bitcoin. Anyway, but they think they're going to go high places with the program, and maybe they will. People will probably like automatically donating to their nonprofits and charities. Here's another headline. China State News calls for iron fist regulation of Bitcoin exchanges. Well, they just outlawed Bitcoin exchanges. I mean, how could they have an iron fist if they're not even there? Let's see what it says. And, you know, some of the Bitcoin gurus, I like to watch the World Crypto Network with Thomas Hunt, Tone Bays, and Jimmy Song. They think, well, China's, you know, they stopped it so they could get a handle on how they think they're going to regulate it, and then they will reopen. So that's what they think is going to happen with China and Bitcoin. Anyway, China State News calls for iron fist regulation of Bitcoin exchanges. And this was dated yesterday. The Chinese government's media arm, the Xinhua News Agency, has defended regulators' recent decision to outlaw token sales, or ICOs, and the voluntary closure of Bitcoin exchanges that followed. Oh, now they were voluntary. They had said they actually banned them. So we're not getting the straight news out of there. ICOs, I don't fully stand, other than it's like when you go into a pizza shop and you put coins, quarters in. I've seen this in laundromats too. You put quarters in the machine, you get tokens out that are only good on the games there. That's kind of what an ICO is in relation to its parent cryptocurrency. So you can't spend it anywhere but whatever they've designated towards it. And maybe it's a nonprofit. I don't know. Anyway, heavily critical of cryptocurrency exchanges, Xinhua said they had become a favorite among criminals across the world in an article today. Exchanges, it continues, are known to have concocted pyramid schemes and engaged in illegal activities, criminal activity disguised as scientific and technological innovation. That does happen sometimes, but not all of them. So they've closed it down long enough to sort it out. Anyway, the article follows a statement by authorities in early September which prohibited the sale of blockchain tokens as a method of fundraising. In the following month, a number of exchanges citing the statement announced they would voluntarily close their doors. Xinhua argued that even following the crackdown, there are still many regulatory vacuums that authorities need to address, in part because of the global use of cryptocurrencies. Yeah, this is a really easy way for people to get money out of the country. Anyway, solutions suggested by the agency, which is often considered the voice of the government, include strengthening existing regulations and establishing a full regulatory framework for exchanges with specific requirements, such as a cap on large volume trading, ID verification, make it like a bank, and know your customer and anti and anti-money laundering procedures. Xinhua News Agency has previously written articles collecting instances of Bitcoin fraud. Well, there's fraud in every currency. And some of it has nothing to do with bankers. I mean, there are people out there who defraud other people. That's just life. And so, but it's, you know, there's people that even do it with greenbacks, you know, and so you can't do ID verification and everything. And getting overbearing bureaucrats into every small little transaction is defeating. It's just, it's not really necessary. I mean, we have, you know, your banks and credit unions and everybody are, you know, reporting to the government for every transaction you make that comes up to $10,000. And, you know, they're looking for drug people. They're treating everybody as if they're drug dealers and committing crimes, even if they're not. So, I don't know. There was this funny, I like to watch another channel called China Uncensored, and he tells backstories on a lot of the goings-on in the Chinese government and different things. And he did a story recently on how Chinese millionaires connive to get their money out of China. You know, I guess Bitcoin's not an option right now. All the exchanges have closed, voluntarily or not. They can't just put their money into Bitcoin and then retrieve it in another currency in another country or anything like that. But, you know, this article on China Uncensored was it's right across the water from Hong Kong. It's not Hong Kong. Now I need to look at a map. I'll get the name of the city in just a second. Let's see, because it's right across, like there's a bay between them. And this city, I think it starts with an M. Why don't I just find the China Uncensored. It's probably not in the title. And it's not giving me maps. Give me a map. And I just want to see the name of the city across from it. Okay, it looks like my internet paused here. No, it says I'm still connected. I'll find it for you, and I'll put it in the show notes, because it's a good episode. And it's a city that starts with an M, and it's like just to the north of Hong Kong across the water, or maybe it's to the south. I don't know, but there's a bay between them. And gambling goes legal there, and Chinese millionaires go there to gamble, and it's a kind of a rigged game. They lose very little. You know, they buy their tokens, they play their game in which almost nothing is lost. Then they cash in their chips in the second currency and leave. And that's how they launder their money. And my screen is just lagging. Well, you know what? I'm going to close a few tabs. And you know what? I'm going to put on my second round of commercials while I clear up my tab problem here. Nope, won't even show me that. Okay, I got to close the back page here. Close. I apologize, people. I had so much fun just reading all this. Like, wow, where does this go? I got that habit years ago when the web first came out, when you read a story, you could hit the back button, no problem. It would just, you know, just go back to the screen you had just displayed as if you had never closed it. Now, the back button on browsers, I don't know why, but they reload the page you just left, fresh, new, you know, all the commercials and everything else. And it's just really, really annoying. So I developed the habit of opening a new tab rather than just going to the article. And every time I want to click on a link, I go to a new tab. And then rather than hit the back button and reloading and waiting, I just close the tab. And that works really well, except that sometimes I accumulate too many. Okay, now it's actually showing me pictures. I'm recovering here. So that's a real burden on my computer. So I shouldn't do it. No, there's the studio tab. And I will find the name of that city, and I will find that China Uncensored episode, because it's a pretty hilarious episode. And I will be scroll down. I played you this, you know. Here, I'll play you this one. Come on. Close some more tabs. Patience, patience. I only have four tabs open now. One of them just says new. I don't know what the problem is. I'm going to hit refresh and see if I can get anything nice. Where's my F5 key? I'll try again. Okay, I did crash my browser, and so now I'm reopening. And it totally logged me out. No, it didn't. There it is. I'll go back to the studio. I apologize, folks. Okay. And here is Save Around Books.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are seven of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
So I'm back, and for any one of our advertisers, you can go to freedomizerradio.com, and there are visual ads that you can click on and visit any one of our advertisers. And let me bring up the screen here. Bell. Back to what I was reading, you guys. So in China Uncensored, this was dated a couple weeks ago, this how they launder their money. Here it is. No, that's Macau's casinos. Yeah, it's the same. Let's see, how China's wealthy use Macau. Macau, M-A-C-A-U, M-A-C-A-U, to get money out. And in the very next article, this was dated a month ago, and then the next day after that, he put out an article did Macau's casinos typhoon warning, because those casinos were racking up the dollars, and so they kind of delayed. They had a big typhoon, and they delayed warning people to get out in order to boost their bottom line. And I don't know if anybody went to jail over that. It might be too soon. It's only a month ago. Anyway, I'll put both those articles in there. You know, China's going to figure big in this cryptocurrency thing eventually. So let me pull up more. Well, let's jump from CoinDesk to news.bitcoin.com. South Korean crypto community to push back against ICO ban. That's the South Korean. So I guess the South Korean government got involved in that too. Here's a large Japanese energy supplier at Bitcoin payments with a discount. Well, that's pretty good. So you can pay your Japanese electric bill in Bitcoin. And, you know, I did a search one time. You can buy real estate in Bitcoin right now. It's really pricey real estate, your normal middle-class home. But it's coming. It's coming, you know. Coinbase under investigation for Ethereum flash crash. Ooh. 18 hours ago, I've got some coins. I mean, I have a Coinbase account, and I own some Ethereum. What does this mean? Coinbase under investigation for Ethereum flash crash. And they have an ad now for a Bitcoin wallet for your phone, so you can take your money off the exchange and not worry about it. The commodities futures, of course, depending on the amount. I mean, I don't want to have any money in my phone that's worth more than the phone itself. It doesn't make sense to me. So, there are things you can install on your computers, but I don't want my laptop to be a target. So I'm going to get one of those little hardware wallets. They have various prices. Amazon carries them. Other people carry them. Search them out. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission is investigating Coinbase for an Ethereum flash crash that occurred in June. Okay, that's before I owned any Ethereum. During the crash, the ETH exchange rate plummeted down in an instant, but quickly regained its price. According to Bloomberg, Ethereum dropped from trading at $317.81, down to 10 cents in a split second. However, its recovery was also swift, a $300 price point in mere seconds. Bloomberg, let me see what Ethereum is trading at right this minute. I think it's just below 300 right now. So it's kind of trading flat, isn't it? Let's see. Well, it was going up for a while. Its curve kind of matches Bitcoin, but way down on the price scale like that. So let's see. Ethereum right now, and it's 24-hour trading on these cryptocurrencies around the world. It's not like stock markets that do banker's hours. Yeah, Ethereum right now is $289.72 for one Ether. That's what you can get. And the market capitalization is about a third of what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin market capitalization is $69 billion, $425,000 in the rest. Whereas Ethereum market capitalization is $27 billion. So $69 billion versus $27 billion. So right now, Bitcoin's the favorite. Litecoin was doing really well for a while. It's just kind of, that is trading flat at $50.68 right now. It only has $2.6 billion in market capitalization. I would love to know the number of people owning. Me, more of a sense of confidence in them rather than how much money is invested into them. Because you could have, you know, 69 billionaires invested in Bitcoin, and it ain't going nowhere because it's not reaching the little people. But I don't think that's what's going on, but you never know. Anyway, I go back to the headlines. Back to this article. Ethereum dropped from trading at $317.81 down to 10 cents in a split second and recovered to 300 in mere seconds. The Bloomberg article said the Commodity Futures Trading Commission has requested information from Coinbase Inc. about a June 21st incident on its GDEX platform in which the Ether digital token suffered a precipitous drop, falling to 10 cents from $317.81 in milliseconds before quickly recovering, said two people familiar with the matter. Now, who could have caught that? You know? I don't know. I mean, sometimes I watch their GDEX thing and just see how people are trading and stuff. And you can kind of see whether it's sell pressure or buy pressure. It's kind of fun. Anyway, could margin trading have caused the plunge? Margin trading? The CFTC is concerned that leveraged or margin trading may have precipitated the flash crash. Margin trading allows users to borrow money to trade. This is called trading on margin, quote-unquote, or leveraged trading. That's not supposed to be doing that in crypto. Anyway, among the issues the agency is focused on is what role leverage might have played on the plunge. As Coinbase allowed traders to use borrowed money to make bigger wagers than would have otherwise been possible, said the people who asked not to be named because the review isn't public. Well, I've kind of been looking at Coinbase's interface for like a month here, and I see no way to borrow anything. So maybe they eliminated that feature because it hasn't gone since before I got here. After the flash crash, Coinbase discontinued their margin trading service. Aha, answered in the next paragraph. Their actions quickly piqued regulatory interest and scrutiny. And I know that the owners of Coinbase want to play really fair and honest and everything because they don't want to invite over-regulation by the government. And the whole point is to run free and all this stuff. You know, they are complying with a lot of government regulations. They do require a lot of know-your-customer information from their American customer base. So I had to give them, you know, my name and social security number and my bank, my actual bank connections. They weren't going to take any money from me if I didn't have a bank. So the whole point of Bitcoin is for the unbanked long term. So let's see how this plays out. Regulators are now scrutinizing cryptocurrency exchanges even more. It comes as no surprise that the CFTC is thoroughly investigating Coinbase because the CFTC wants to control the Wild West nature of the digital currency ecosystem. Yeah, the lawman has shown up, and now the West is the nicer place to live. And we've just got to find a balance, people. And this is the feeling of Tone Vase, the guy that's on every morning, or almost every morning, on Today in Bitcoin on the World Crypto Network on YouTube. You know, it's like a 10-minute show, but it's good. But this, you know, Tone Vase is the chart guy. He discusses the price and the charts behind the price and the public sentiment and whatever that drives the price up and down. But he believes you need a little bit of government regulation in order to be civilized. You know, we want cryptocurrencies to be civilized. We want them to be really useful. If it's all just Wild West stuff, general world population at large will run away from it, and that's not what we want. Anyway, nature of the digital currency ecosystem. The Bloomberg article also pointed out that Coinbase had conducted $20 billion in cryptocurrency transactions. Yeah, wow, that's like a third of the market cap now. I don't know. Even though officials and regulators are putting pressure on Coinbase, Coinbase doesn't seem to be sweating it. That's because they stopped margin trading months ago, huh? They are fully cooperating with the CFTC's investigation and even emailed this statement in response to the investigation. Quote, as a regulated financial institution, Coinbase complies with regulations and fully cooperates with regulators. After the GDAX market event in June 2017, we proactively reached out to a number of regulators, including the CFTC. We also decided to credit all customers who were impacted by this event. We are unaware of a formal investigation. Even though Coinbase is cooperating, some people are still curious about the cause of the crash. It's months ago, you know, computer, it's like powering off a computer and powering it back up, right? I don't know. Maybe not. What initiated the flash crash? According to sources, the Ethereum flash crash was caused by one monstrous trade. A single $12.5 million sell order triggered auto trades preset by other traders. This resulted in the immediate crash down to 10 cents. Luckily, as soon as Ethereum hit the 10 cent mark, a multitude of traders immediately placed new orders for the digital currency. This caused a jump back around $300. Well, I can see where that could be shaky because not necessarily the same people who lost their holdings recovered their holdings. They might have been different people buying on the dip. So, you know, people who, you know, when you have You know, I played in the stock market a little bit with maybe one or two stocks, and I didn't really have the stomach for it. I seem to have a better stomach for Bitcoin because I understand it better than stocks. But I had, you know, I had read the book, a book on a couple of people who had been just really experts in trading stocks. And one was Jesse Livermore. He was back in the 20s. He made $100 million on the stock market crash. He was an expert at shorting. And shorting is not something I have the stomach for, so I don't do it. But the other book was by Nicholas Darvis. And these books have been available on Amazon. I don't know if they come and go. I mean, these people are long deceased. But that book by Nicholas Darvis was How I Made $2 Million in the Stock Market. Well, in those days, you subscribed to a financial newspaper, and you had columns and columns and columns and columns of stock prices, and you found your stocks, and you noted the price for that day. It wasn't minute-to-minute, you know, hour trading stuff. And he would keep records of those over time, which was a new thing. It wasn't computerized, and he wasn't, he was the one telling the little guy how to do it. I don't know if other people did it. And he would track prices as they were increasing. And what he liked was the slope. If it was increasing, it didn't matter whether it was low or high. You wanted to buy high because the momentum was up and then sell higher. He didn't say, buy low, sell high. He said, buy high and then sell higher. And that's how he put his money together. And he was like the original chart man. Anyway, I tried it, and he would set stop losses. He would call his broker and set stop losses. Like, if the price starts coming down to this point, I want to cut my losses and sell. And so you have a record with your broker and a sell. So this is all automated now. You can do this yourself on StockTrade. And StockTrade. StockTrade, I think Charles Schwab. You know, people who do their own trading, they set automated stop losses. And this thing with Ether, it's like, as stock is climbing, it makes sense to increase your stop loss. You know, these people got lazy and left stop losses sitting at 10 cents when Ether was up at, you know, 300. Why didn't they come in with their pay attention to their accounts and raise their stop loss? I mean, so this is like that shook everybody out of the market, and then people who had buy orders automatically bought back up. And I can see where this $12.5 million sell could shake up a market like that, because there aren't that many actual people in it. You know, there's market caps, and they're wonderful, and they're billions of dollars. But what really counts is how many people are in it. And that's the real goal of Coin, is to get as many people in it as possible. And whether it goes sky high or not, I mean, we see John McAfee swaggering around on interview shows, oh, yeah, Bitcoin's going to, you know, $10,000 within a year, or $500,000 within 10 years. It's like, what does he know? You know, when you see a cryptocurrency go that high, what's actually happening is a run on the currency that people are selling to buy the Bitcoin. So when it gets to full launch, what you'll see is the price will go skyrocketing, because nobody wants the currency that you're selling to get the Bitcoin. So, of course, it'll skyrocket. You'll be rich in worthless dollars. You know, and so, yes, there might be, you know, in a few years, Bitcoin might be $500,000 a Bitcoin, but you wouldn't be able to, you know, buy a pup tent for that. People aren't making this connection. But, you know, of course, this is over time. Right now, I don't have the guts to put all my life savings into cryptos. I'm a body in it. I'm participating. I have a little bit of money in it, but I don't have the nerve to get in full throat yet. And because of this volatility, because of this not enough bodies in it yet. But there's a meme going around that what would you sell your Bitcoin for in the long term or something? And the answer was, in time, you won't have to, because the economy will all run on Bitcoin, and you can buy a house in one country, for the same money that you buy it in another country, well, given, you know, same conditions, whatever. Of course, conditions are different in each market, but there are people whose paychecks come in Bitcoin. And I haven't figured out how to quite get in on that, but I think that would be wonderful. Anyway, let's see. It's currently unclear if margin trading was the culprit. Well, a $12.5 million sell, I don't understand margin trading enough to know. Or if Coinbase was culpable for the incident. Regardless, you know what? You make people come back and check their stop losses. That's how Coinbase can do it. Email people once every couple of months and say, hey, double check your stop losses. Is this what you want? You know, because if you're way, I mean, what's the point of having a stop loss if it's set at $5 and it's worth $100 or set at 10 cents and your thing is worth $300? Move the stop loss up and just sit it at $290 or something, you know, and let it wiggle a little bit, you know, as it's growing. But I didn't have the nerve that, you know, I tried playing with stop losses. And what happened to me was, yeah, I didn't want to get out of it, but I had my stop loss set too high. And so the stock price wiggled a little bit, and I was sold out immediately. And I just didn't like somebody else making the decision for me. I had wanted to stay in that stock, and I didn't like circumstances making the decision for me. I'm more of a hands-on. I want to watch it, and I want to tell it when to sell. And that's me. And so then I have to watch it. So maybe I should just set, okay, I wouldn't leave my stop loss at 10 cents. Maybe I can have a dragging stop loss, you know, whatever percentage, 20% behind or something, you know, and I think there's probably such a thing. You know, it's been several years since I played with Scott Trade, and I think there's a you know, kind of a moving stop loss that you can set as a percentage instead of as an actual value, and that would be valuable to me. Anyway, it is currently unclear if margin trading was the culprit. Okay, what do you think of the Ethereum flash crash on Coinbase? Well, I just told you. Was it caused by margin trading? Well, I don't know. Even if Coinbase had a hand in it, is it up to regulators to control the market and market actors? Let us know in the comments below. And so I think there are a few comments here. Oh, there's 37 of them. Oh, it is Mike Sliwa. I don't know who that is. And he's got a comment 18 hours ago. Market manipulation. You see it all the time with Bitcoin too. No way that $16 billion can be retracted in 45 minutes from total Bitcoin markup after China said that it was about to close its exchanges. The course dropped $1,000, and 50 minutes later, the course was back to only a loss of only $300. Exchanges make money big time. Hooray for regulation. Ever saw the money of the movie? I think he meant movie. The Wolf of Wall Street. Penny stocks, same trick. Exchanges control the people. That's because if there's not enough people, that's all. If there's enough people, the people take control. They decide when people should sell and buy. You think that you make a right choice. In the end, you're just a puppet. That's if you're playing with stop losses. Then other people are making your choices for you. And they're valuable. Yeah, it's like wearing a seatbelt. So your stop losses. But of course, you know, you could buy back in as soon as you sell, but by then the price has taken off and you've actually lost money. So, because you can't buy back in for the same price that you sold it at. Anyway, I don't know that was market manipulation. I think it might have been an accident. Just a big gorilla stepped on the whole pie is how I take this thing. And this is kind of what happened like last month. We had the Chinese ordering their people to get out of Bitcoin, and we had we had Jamie Dimon saying the same thing. I'll fire any of my people who buy Bitcoin. And then they turn around and they do it. So let's see. How are we doing on the time? We have a few minutes left. Yay! So let me give you some any other neato headlines here. An inside look at Genesis Block. I think that's the first Bitcoin block. There was Hong Kong's new cryptocurrency working space. I know there are cities that do this. Chandler here in Arizona, was it too? I'm actually not in Chandler right now. I'm kind of on the road. But where I live, they have something called a gangplank. And you can go with your laptop and you can work. And it's a shared workspace. And I think that's what's going on. Anyway, must be related. North Korea is suspected of having hacked a number of Bitcoin exchanges in South Korea. This is not a hack of Bitcoin. This is a hack of exchanges. That's a possibility. Hong Kong exchange Tidebit seeks to capitalize upon Chinese cryptocurrency crackdown. Yeah, because Hong Kong is a separate legal system. I don't know. Maybe people will go to Macau. They'll trade in their gambling chips for Bitcoin. I don't know. Let's see. Government head of IT department fired for mining Bitcoin using state-owned computers in Crimea. Oh, man, those coin actually belong to the state of Crimea. Oh, boy. Nigerian P2P, I think it's point-to-point Bitcoin exchange, offers services to all African nations. Wow, good for them. Good for them. Let's see. Ross Ulbricht's 144,336 Bitcoin. Well, obviously he bought when it was worth pennies. I don't know. You know, I'm short on time, so I'm not going to read you the whole article. But you can go to news.bitcoin.com, and I'll put a freeze frame of it because these are news pages. They change all the time. Their headlines change. So I'll take an archive snapshot of it, and I'll put the link in the show notes at freedomizerradio.com, and you go to today's Breaking the Banksters episode, and that's under the headlines tab, and you can find my show link. And I think with that, it's probably time to sign off and wish you all well, and we'll welcome Ben back next week. He's been at this a lot longer than I have, and I know he's got a lot of good information for you. And let's see. I know there's a button I need to push here. Whoops, and that wasn't it. Oh, man. Good thing. I have a minute left to recover myself. I got a minute. Let's see. One, two, three. And everybody have a wonderful week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.